The opinions expressed on the following sponsored program are strictly those of the host, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of this station, its staff, management, or sponsors. Welcome to the Forum for Nonprofits, presented as a public service by the Beasley Broadcast Group, hosted by a representative of the Spirit of Giving Network. To volunteer for the Spirit of Giving Network, call 561-385-0144. Now, here's today's show.
Welcome, nonprofit community. Thank you so much for joining me today. So happy that you're here to hear yet again just incredible works that are going on in South Florida with just wonderful, wonderful people working so hard on the community behalf. I'm Kara Zimmerman, grateful to be here and thankful to Spirit of Giving Network for allowing us to highlight all the good works that go on day after day, night after night, 365, working tirelessly to make our community better. And Stacy Hoagland, my beautiful Stacy in front of me, thank you so much for coming today. Stacy is the coordinator for the Partners in Policymaking here in Florida. She's also the president of Autism Society of Florida and wears many, many hats, which she'll tell you about. And so many parents are, over the years, are just so grateful for your help and guidance in learning the system in the schools if you have a child that's autistic. So, Stacy, thank you for taking the time out to talk to us about the issues of policymaking and autism.
Well, thank you for having me here. It's a great, such a privilege to be here.
Yeah, thank you. So tell us, what's a day like in Stacy's world?
Oh,
what's
my goodness.
Going on? Yeah,
I think
tell us.
The problem is that every day is different.
We need more Stacy's, right? To clone you.
Well, that would be fabulous because then maybe I could lay on the beach.
Yes.
That would be really good. I have to put in for that, see if we can work that out. But yeah, everything that I get to do is something that I'm fortunate enough to be able to do. And so there's so much benefit to be able to be put in a position where you can help other people.
Yeah.
I think that most of us, I think that's how most of us who get into it stay in it, even when we're tired and we think that we're battling a system that doesn't want us to battle with it. I think that at the end of the day, it's so rewarding to even if you just chip away at the iceberg and you see, okay, I got a little piece of it off today. Then it gives you that oomph the next day to go, okay, well, I made that happen yesterday. So let's see if I can get a crater off today. And so it kind of sucks you in and keeps you in.
For years, I mean, I remember you said you got started because of your son and trying to find appropriate educational tools for him, right?
Right, yeah. I have a son, Zachary. He's 23 now,
23.
And I don't know where the years have gone.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes, he was diagnosed with autism when he was about 2.5. And even that I had to advocate for, which
well, that
sadly...
was years ago, because that wasn't really probably even really that much of an issue then, as it is. Like, autism wasn't a hot topic.
Yeah, no, it certainly has gotten bigger because, like, this recent report from the Centers for Disease Control has us now at 1 in 59 children have an autism spectrum disorder. And back when my son was diagnosed, I think it was something like 1 in 1,000. And so it has greatly changed over the years. And even the report of the 1 in 59, that was even from some research that was done 2 years ago, so which was up 15% from the last poll just 2 years prior. So, yes, it continues to grow. And a lot of people, especially professionals, some physicians will say that we're getting better at diagnosing, which we are. We certainly are. Our medical establishment, the psychologists are getting much better at being able to diagnose autism. However, our classrooms of kids that have significant challenges have astronomically grown. And we would not have missed those students before. Those are not your easy to include students. So I think that we have both going on. I think that we definitely have a growth in overall autism numbers. And yes, we do have a growth in being able to better identify those kids. A couple of the issues that we still have, which is kind of sad, because when my son was diagnosed, the average diagnosis, year of diagnosis was 5 years old. Well, according to this new CDC report, we're still between 4 and 5 years old on average. Some kids are diagnosed earlier, but our average is still at that point, which is kind of sad because those kids then are missing out on early intervention. And we know early intervention saves everybody, saves the family, certainly the challenges and the heartache, the individual with long-lasting effects as they become an adult. If they have received the early intervention, then they're just more prepared for inclusionary education, for jobs, to be able to live and have jobs with everybody else as adults. And the other thing is females. We're still not doing a good job with identification of females on the spectrum.
Because I have been told that it's more male.
It totally is. Yes, it is. But what's happening is we're seeing more women are ending up getting diagnosis as women than men. So it's disproportionate so let's say we're looking at a group of 20 adults and the women on the spectrum are being diagnosed to a greater degree than men on the spectrum, because men oftentimes will get diagnosed as children. And so some of those women were finding that because of the disproportionality of the two sexes, we're thinking, okay, so we're missing them somehow. We're not identifying them, or we're identifying them as having an intellectual disability versus an autism spectrum disorder.
And when you say women, you're talking about, let's say, an adult woman is yes. now realizing that she has autism right. and it wasn't captured or looked at when she was young.
Yes. And a lot of times it's when she has children who are diagnosed with autism. And then, you know, when you have kids with anything, whether they're highly intelligent or they're great at sports or whatever it might be, it kind of tends you to think about yourself and, okay, so when I was a kid, did I like to do that too? Or was I like that? And so we all do that naturally. And I think that a lot of these women are thinking, okay, wait, I kind of had that same struggle that I see my child having, but my child now has a diagnosis. Could I have, you know, had autism from a young age and it not have been identified? So they're seeking out help to look at that, to see if they do have it. And it's not that it's going to drastically change their world. However, the one thing that it does when you have a diagnosis is it sort of explains to you, and you have the aha moment of, that's why things were so hard for me. That's why I wasn't sometimes an easy target for bullying. Or, you know, that's why I didn't have the amount of friendships that I really wanted to have. And so it kind of just gives that person a feeling of, okay, now I get it. And it's like the same. I work with a lot of parents who have children on the autism spectrum that maybe, you know, very capable kids of being able to keep up with the academics. They're in regular education classes. And children in, say, middle school, where the whole social dynamic is very difficult for all kids in general. But yet you throw a kid in there who has social deficits because of a disability, and it just compounds itself. And a lot of those parents will say to me, well, we're not telling him or her that they have autism. And I just don't think that that's a wise thing to do. I've had so many families who do finally decide, okay, we're going to have that talk, kind of like the sex talk. We're going to have that talk, and we're going to talk about what autism is and how it impacts different people in different ways, and, you know, and kind of share with them their diagnosis. So many times the kids they might be kids, but they also have the aha moment where, oh, that's why things are difficult for me. That's why I struggle in this class or that class, and writing is super hard, and I've got the thoughts in my head, but I can't seem to get them down on paper. And so for so many people, it gives them just a sense of, okay, I got that. Now I can move on, instead of getting stuck in what I can or cannot do.
And your son at age 2, what were the aha moments? What did you notice that brought you to bring him to the doctor regarding, was there a delay? Was there, what did you notice as a parent? Because you probably had no idea.
Yeah, well, he was one of the kids that's fairly common in autism where he had a few words at a year old. So at 12 months old, he had probably 8 to 10 words, you know, typical development, no red flags, yeah. Everything seemed fine. And then over the course of, say, the next 6 months, we saw a significant decline to where he went to speaking no words. became very just all about himself. He would walk around the house, and I would call his name, and he wouldn't respond. We thought he had lost his hearing at that point. He was not really responding to, come on, let's go. However, if something came on the television, like Thomas the Tank Engine, which a lot of kids on the spectrum really like, he would hear that from across the house and come running. So then we thought, okay, it's not his hearing. So what's going on? So we went to the pediatrician, who said, stop comparing him to your other son. He's fine. Let's look at the growth chart. He's at 100 percentile on his height and his weight. Stop worrying. He's a boy. Give it some time. Okay. I thought, you know, he's the doctor. He's a pediatrician. He's been in practice for probably 30 years. He understands. So I would let it go. And I let it go up until he was a little over two, probably close to 2.5. And a friend of mine who I had previously worked with in the school system, she was a school principal that had a program for kids with autism, and she was over. And she didn't say anything, but I could tell she was watching him. And the next day she called me and she said, I don't want you to be mad at me. And I said, I'm not going to be mad at you. What's up? And she said, you know, I have kids with autism in my school, and Zachary's showing a lot of the symptoms that I see in these children.
Which were?
Well, just being disconnected from others, had no interest. We had a house full of people who had absolutely no interest in being with anyone, trying to communicate with anyone, would hand flap, so like repetitive, just raising his hands up and down, pacing in a certain area of the house, like just to do the same things over and over again. Wouldn't really play with cars. He would just flip the car upside down and spin the wheels. So those kind of things. And he has an older brother. They're 19 months apart, and really didn't have much interest in him. Just wanted to either be sitting in front of the TV, because I predate Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
So there was no iPads or any of that. We were lucky to have cable TV. I mean, that's really what we had. And lots of VHS tapes, because at the time it was VHS. So we had lots of those. And so he would just want to sit and watch the same videos over and over again. He didn't need a diverse amount of videos. He was perfectly fine with watching the same ones over and over again. And so I went, my friend said, you need another opinion. So I called my pediatrician and I told him what she had said. And he told me that educators should remain inside the education box and not try to practice to be physicians. And I thought, oh, okay, that's sending up a lot of red flags in my head. And I said, okay, well, can you go ahead and just give me a referral? Because I didn't know a neurologist. I had no idea what the next step was. So he did. And he said, but I'm sure it's fine. It wasn't 5 minutes in a neurologist's office, because my son was running around, grabbing everything, totally non-responsive to the physician. And I think he just wanted to get us out of his office. Very quickly gave me a diagnosis and sent me on my way. And so I got a little bit of information from him, but I just researched everything to death, got him in occupational therapy, speech therapy, swimming, applied behavior analysis therapy. We got him into everything very quickly. We also started a gluten and casein free diet, because I'm a big believer in how what we consume affects how we feel and just our overall development. And that was huge for him. And so I was very lucky that, because it doesn't work the same for everyone, being gluten free specifically, but it was amazing for him. He had up until that point very loose bowel movements, to the point where I called it diarrhea. The doctor said, oh, no, it's just loose bowels. I don't know. It was like the same thing to me. And within a couple of days, he actually had normal bowel movements. So I thought, okay, this is good. At the end of the first week, he was sleeping 10 hours a night, 10 to 12 hours, where before he slept maybe two at a time. And so I thought, if this is all I get, I'm good. Because, you know, when our kids don't sleep, we don't sleep. So I thought, okay, this is good. And then I'd say within a month of, you know, the dietary interventions as well as all the other therapies, he said his first word, and we started to make some progress. And really, the TV got shut off, and we just got in his face constantly. And I didn't have enough money to pay a certified behavior analyst to run a home program. That's in our world. What a home program is, where we bring therapists into our home, and they work with the kids on using applied behavior analysis. And it's basically, you do this, and you're going to earn this reward. That's sort of what it is. And so I did my own homework, and I developed my own home program. And now I do that for other people. And so it became a huge passion for me. And I saw so many changes within him. And then today, as I'm one of my hats that I wear is I'm an educational advocate. And when I go into schools and I observe students, and if I work with the teacher on just even providing some of the methodology of ABA, it can have amazing results for kids in school and out of school. So it's tried and true. There's tons of research that supports applied behavior analysis when it's done correctly, because it's also one of those things that if you sit a kid at a table and you ask them to, I don't know, touch the spoon, and you give them a piece of candy or a cookie, and you're just running through drills that I don't really think are meaningful to someone, that I would consider bad ABA. We would do things with my son, like my therapist would take him out into the backyard and put him on the swing, and he had to at least give her eye contact in order to be pushed. So there had to be some type of reciprocity between the two of them. He wasn't going to get pushed just because he sat there and waited. He had to make some sort of connection with the person who was with him. And then his reward, so his reinforcer, would be you get a push. And if you want another push, you got to look again. And so that's using the methodology functionally and meaningfully.
Well, when we come back, I want to hear about this 23-year-old now and how he's doing and how lucky he is to have you for his advocate.
Okay.
Thank you, Stacy. We'll be right back.
Confusion ever someone or have sudden you trouble had speaking, understanding?
Understanding trouble? Have you sudden have or speaking someone ever confusion?
Have you ever had sudden confusion, trouble speaking, or understanding someone?
It could be one of the five signs of stroke.
Sudden weakness or numbness of the face, arm, or leg.
Sudden trouble with vision in one or both eyes.
Suddenly having trouble walking or difficulty with balance.
Or a sudden intense headache that comes out of nowhere.
If you or someone you know has any of these symptoms, don't wait. Call 911 immediately. You could make a difference in someone's life, someone you love, maybe even your own.
It's late until, wait, don't too.
Don't wait until it's too late. Time lost is brain lost.
Find out more at powertoendstroke.org. Brought to you by the American Heart Association, American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
Hey, welcome back, nonprofit community. So interesting. We're here with Stacy Hoagland about autism and partners and policymaking, and she's going to give us a quick update about her son, and then we're going to learn more about partners and policymaking. Thank you so much.
All righty. So throughout his education, I found that I was his advocate. I had to advocate for him. One of the greatest things that I think for him was inclusion. And so being in a regular education classroom with support, in elementary school, he always had an aide or a paraprofessional in there to support him. And she was fabulous. We actually had the same one throughout 6 years of elementary school, which I don't typically recommend unless you happen to have somebody who's as amazing as the one that worked with my son. And our goal was to really set him up to prepare to not have to have an aide in middle school. And he did. He was good. He didn't need an aide. Not that things were smooth. There were certainly bumps in the road, but that's life. Life is filled with bumps. And if you don't let your kids feel some of those bumps when they're faced with them as adults, they're not going to have the skills to deal with them. So you can't shelter your kid. You cannot be the helicopter parent that thinks that you're doing a good job by keeping them from having those rough moments, because we all have them. It's part of life. And it does not get easier when they become adults. And so you want to be able to allow them, with your support, to have some of those bumps in the road. And is inclusion hard? Oh, yes. Inclusion is very hard. But now he's 23, and I don't regret a moment of it. Now he goes to the Art Institute in Fort Lauderdale. He is studying to be a film editor. And so he's already done some PSAs for some nonprofits. And he just it's a gift that he has, And he never passed at the time. It was FCAT in the state of Florida. Didn't pass FCAT, and that's okay. We don't need to pass FCATs and FSAs in order to find our place in this world. And really, that's what we all hope for, whether we have a disability or a learning difference or we don't. We all just want to find our passion and make a difference for ourselves and for others around us. So that is my goal for him, and that is his goal for himself. And
does he live at home, or is he?
He does.
Yeah.
He lives at home. He, in addition to autism, he has a seizure disorder, which cropped up on the scene when he was 16. So he didn't always live with that. So we're still kind of figuring that out. The goal, of course, is for him to be able to, it would be great if he lives independent, but if not, that's okay. He'll have a supported situation in living, but he's still in school right now. So I actually have both of my kids at home, which a lot of people have their, you know, typical kids at home, you know, going to college or coming home from college. And
you've got a swinging door at the house.
Yeah,
right?
So that's not unusual. But the goal certainly is that he, you know, has a place he could call his own one day.
That sounds awesome. And again, just having that support. And really, parents need that support, too. And that's what this Partner in Policymaking program is.
Yeah, so Partners in Policymaking, when I went through the program in 2006, I was already an advocate. So I kind of had this false sense of security, maybe thinking, I got this. I know what I'm doing. And the program just opened so many windows and really opened the window into my brain to make me really think about people with disabilities, developmental disabilities specifically, who have complex needs, and how they're constantly told they're unemployable or you can't do this and you can't do that. And nothing's further from the truth. If a person has a desire to make a change in their life, there are plenty of opportunities to do so. I mean, if we look back at even Stephen Hawking, if Stephen Hawking was born 100 years before he was, he would have been institutionalized. He would not have been able to bring all the gifts that he had to this world. And so we need to kind of get outside of our boxes when we think and we look at people who might, in our opinion, might have a complex need and help them receive the supports that they need in order to become the best person that they can be or who it is that they dream that they would like to be or become. And it might be something as simple as forging relationships and being able to be out there in the community and develop a higher quality of life. Because again, that's what we all want. We all want a quality of life to where at the end of every day we can sit and go, all right, today was a pretty good day. And now I have a goal for tomorrow and what I'd like to accomplish tomorrow. And just because a person has a disability doesn't mean that they don't have those same feelings. But it's up to the rest of us to kind of figure out how can we help them with their input, because they need to be at the table. The rest of us should not be making decisions for people who are living it themselves. So we need to have them at the table with us. And that's what Partners does, because it's not just parents of kids with disabilities, but it's self-advocates all coming together to learn. We bring presenters in from all over the country. It's actually an international training program. And the focus is on leadership and advocacy and teaching people how to either advocate for others if you're a parent. So it's not about helping you become an advocate for your own child. It's about becoming a systems advocate. So in our state, going to Tallahassee and knowing how to talk to legislators and knowing how to, you know, move the envelope across the table and get people that are in a position to make change to consider us and not just have us be an afterthought. After they make all their decisions, oh, yeah, we got to worry about them too. No, we want to be the first thought. And then after you set it up, then you can kind of let the rest of it sort of trickle out. So Partners in Policymaking, through the presentations that come in that speak on inclusionary education, employment, housing, transportation, medical, because a lot of these things that the rest of us take for granted, a person with a disability has to fight to get. It's not just good medicine isn't often just handed to them. They have to go out and they have to find it. They have to figure out if they're not yet employed, so they don't have insurance coverage through their work, how are they going to get Medicaid to pay for the quality of care that they may need to treat their condition that they have? It's not easy. And so the program really gives them the information that they need to be able to go to their legislators, go to their county or city commissioners or their police force or whoever it is that's making decisions in the communities, to recognize how we can all work together. Because it's like when you think about inclusion, if you have a child in your classroom who has a complex need and you have to put in certain supports, something called differentiating the instruction for that student, it's not going to only benefit that student. It's going to benefit all of your students, and it's going to make you a better teacher. So it's the same thing with all the other community supports. It's, if you look at curb cuts, you know, like when you're taking a walk and you get to a corner and there's like a little cut in the curb, and we like to think that, oh, it's for moms with strollers. Well, no, not really. It was put there because somebody needs a wheelchair to get around and they can't get up a step when they get to a sidewalk. Do moms with strollers benefit? Heck yeah. Do people who have a hard time getting up a step? Yeah. So it's one of those things that benefits everybody, but it started by helping somebody with a disability.
You know, I'm thinking about, what about in the classroom? Does the inclusion get resistance? Are you finding some resistance, or just educating? You're probably in there educating the teacher on how to do those steps.
There's certainly resistance. Because if you don't know how to successfully include kids, you're going to be resisting. Because it's change. And
absolutely.
So we just help everybody deal with change.
Thank you, Stacey. I wish please come back, because this is so interesting. Partners in Policymaking, thank you so much for this work you do.
You're welcome. Glad to be here.
You've been listening to the Forum for Nonprofits, presented as a public service of the Beasley Broadcast Group, hosted by a representative of the Spirit of Giving Network. To volunteer for the Spirit of Giving Network, call 561-385-0144. And tune in again next week for the Forum for Nonprofits. The opinions expressed on the preceding sponsored program were strictly those of its hosts, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of this station, its staff, management, or sponsors.